The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Autoria, Source Elements, and RSPE Audio Solutions.
Last month, Avid announced their fourth quarter and full year 2020 financial results. Now, most of the detail was rightly targeted at financial investment communities, but one stat jumped out to us, and it was this. The results said 54.9% year-over-year subscription revenue growth in the fourth quarter, driven by a net increase of approximately 27,000 paid subscriptions and strong enterprise subscription sales in the quarter. Now, it was that headline that we felt was real interest to our community, as this is a significant increase in subscription revenue rather than just the overall sort of financial figures. And to help us dig into this headline, I'm joined by Francois, and you recently got a new job at Avid as Vice President Audio Product Management. I'm not sure whether I need to stand up, kneel down, or salute, but anyway, thank you, Francois, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Hey, Mike, it's always a pleasure to have a conversation with you guys.
Great. Now, how's lockdown been treating you? Have you been working from home like most of us?
Yeah, absolutely. And we started doing that really early on. So I think just right about, a little over a year ago, mid-March, Avid decided to keep everyone at home, to basically limit travel unless there was a real imperious reason. And it's been going on since then. So we haven't been going to the offices, except some critical personnel that needs access to servers and things like that. And we've operated really, really well in this mode. I mean, we do, on the Pro Tools team, the development teams are sort of geographically dispersed. We have people in California, across the US, and then in Eastern Europe. So it's something that we're used to. And I want to say that we've been more productive than ever over this past year. A little claustrophobic at times, but it's been good on that front.
And has this opportunity to be at home more enabled you to be more creative and perhaps make some more music?
Myself, not as much as I would have liked. I did quite a bit when we launched Carbon last year, because I actually took it among myself to be part of the beta testing team for Carbon. So that was great. I got the unit in July last year, so I got plenty of time to try out the functionality and do some recording. But then we had obviously the launch to prepare for, which was a big undertaking for us, for the whole company. And then we did also a few interesting things where we reorganized the company, and that's actually kind of something that was part of in these sort of financial statements you mentioned at the top of the podcast. We went back to a business unit model where audio is a business unit, video is a business unit, and then media and cloud is another business unit. And this wasn't the case before. We had development teams that all sort of reported into sort of a central organization. So now we have a general manager for audio that's responsible for the full sort of financial picture of audio. And so we've basically now have a really strong focus on audio solutions, more than we did ever before. We also, Sibelius, our notation solution, was actually under a different umbrella, and now it's all back under audio and one big happy audio family. But that took a while to get that going. And eventually we promoted a bunch of people to new roles, and I got this new VP role. So I've been busy with that rather than being creative, but I'm also not despairing. I still have Carbon and S1, and my rig is right in front of me, and I hope I can get back to it very soon.
Great. Now, before we get into the increase in subscriptions, how does your new role differ from your old job? Presumably more meetings and
a lot of meetings, that's for sure. And a lot of people on the East Coast, so I get to start really early in my day. But basically what we did, so my role, audio product management, is actually sort of a fairly broad role. I still look after all of sort of the product definition, product strategy, and complete sort of product lifecycle for everything audio that we do. So my previous role, I was just focused on Pro Tools and our control surfaces. But now I also look after live sound and music notation. So I get to see the full picture of audio. But that extended beyond product management because I'm also in charge of product marketing. So our team that's basically responsible for translating, you know, all the technology speak that we have in product development and make that accessible to people and kind of create our communication strategy work under me now. And then everything that has to do with alliances, third-party developers, and also business development as we sort of re-energize our efforts to work with the plugin manufacturers and partners is also under my responsibility. So that's a lot. And that means that we promoted a few people. So Sam Butler, who used to run music notation for us, is now director of audio software. So he looked after Sibelius and Pro Tools with a fairly large team of people working for him. And then Al McKenna, who used to run live sound for us, is now looking after our Pro Tools hardware, well, actually audio hardware efforts, which includes Pro Tools hardware systems, control surfaces, live sound consoles as well.
Okay. So as I'm sure you're aware, views about software subscriptions are pretty binary. It seems you either love them or hate them. And we have a phrase here in the UK, it's like Marmite, you know, you love it or you hate it. But I know that particular phrase doesn't necessarily translate across the different communities. But whatever we think of them, we really can't ignore the evidence from these 2020 figures with what is effectively a 55% increase in subscriptions. Now, to kind of better understand that headline figure, what is considered in these figures as subscription revenue? Is it just what I would call the rental subscription plans, or are the support and update plans included in this figure?
So this figure is only what you refer to as rental. So it's the subscription plans that are either monthly, an annual commitment paid monthly, or an annual paid upfront rental. And I like to look at it in sort of the following lens: is what you're subscribing to is both the usage of the software and the updates and the support. So you get that in all in one go. Now, so those figures that you're referring to, that's what it includes on. That's the only thing it includes. Now, if you're referring to the support and update plan that our perpetual users purchase, that is separate. And it's actually considered maintenance revenue under our financial reporting. And it all rolls up into what analysts call strategic revenue. So the combination of subscription and the maintenance revenue make up this this thing that investors look at called strategic revenue.
Now, obviously, the subscription revenue in that we've just been talking about is for Pro Tools Media Composer and Sibelius, as well as the things like Media Central and Nexus. But what about sort of breakdown? Do you have any sort of figures for the breakdown of rental and support, you know, in terms of these products? I'm just trying to get a sense of what's actually behind these figures.
Well, I mean, I'll give you some elements because I can't, there's something I can't get into the total details of. What I can do is share the things that have been publicly shared. So at the time of the reporting, out of the number of subscriptions that we currently have that are active, and I'm just talking about the subscriptions, so the rentals, if you, in your words, yeah. Pro Tools is nearing about 200,000 at this point. So we're the lion's share of the number of subscriptions for the company. And as you know, Pro Tools subscriptions are actually slightly more expensive than Media Composer. So as far as revenue, we're the lion's share. And you, if you add to that the Sibelius subscriptions, which are also quite strong, you have a pretty good sort of audio picture in our subscription landscape. And if you look at the year-over-year growth, that's the most staggering part, because the numbers for the company are pretty impressive in general. But if you dig down to the Pro Tools level, We had over 60% growth of our subscription revenue year on year, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Is that increase in the subscription model actually pulling away revenue from the perpetual model? Are you seeing a sort of move towards subscription and away from perpetual?
I actually don't have any real evidence of that. Because our perpetual revenue is actually really stable. It's smaller in comparison to our subscription revenue. So there's more people choose the subscription model. I think a lot of people are embracing the sort of, first of all, the cost effectiveness, like it costs less upfront, if you will. And there's a flexibility to it that seems to be embraced quite widely. But our perpetual business remains stable, strong, actually. We grew it a little year on year, which means that our business in terms of the support and update contracts is actually quite stable as well. So this is not where the growth is coming from, but it's still a category of users that we very much cater to. There's always the question, are you guys going to ditch perpetual to the benefit of subscription? Right now,
yeah.
We don't have a strong business case to make to do that, because it's still a significant sort of revenue stream for us. So we have no immediate plans to make any change there.
But what about the recent 2021.3 release? The loyalty rewards for the first time were targeted specifically at annual subscription users. So unlike all loyalty rewards till now, anybody with a valid rental subscription or a valid perpetual license with an active upgrade plan was eligible to receive the loyalty reward. In this case, you've chosen to target the subscription customers. Was that sort of a very much a focused intent to sort of sweeten the deal, perhaps?
Absolutely. I think there's no question there that as a business, it makes more sense for us to focus on subscription business. If you look at the figures, the subscription business is what allows us to invest in research and development. So period. We still want to cater to our loyal customer base and folks that really want to go perpetual. So folks that are, religiously paying the support and update will still have that option, going forward. But we do want, as much as possible, shift people to the subscription model, because that actually allows us to invest more in providing better solutions to our users. It's a model that's been widely accepted in other parts of the audio industry, except the DAW side of things. People are seeing a lot of value in sort of these plug-in bundles that exist now, or subscription services such as, Output or Splice, and all these things that include, content as well as plugins. The switch to that model in the DAW world is still slow to happen. We've been sort of the precursor in there, but I think it's a direction that a lot of companies are eventually going to make because of that, constant revenue stream, that higher growth that allows you to reinvest. Because, the Wall Street thing is something that doesn't really, obviously it's my job to make our investors happy, as part of my job to make our investors happy. But that side of the equation really means that, when your stock price goes up and when you get more possibility of investment, that's when you can do more cool things for your users. You can invest more in R&D, which, by the way, we are. The audio business unit has got quite a bit of investment in terms of being able to beef up our engineering resources. So we hope that the users will see the benefit of that in the near future. And also even looking creatively at partnerships and, acquisitions and things like that, this puts you in a much better place. So for us strategically, it makes a lot of sense to switch people to subscriptions or to encourage people to go subscription, which is why the loyalty reward thing, which, by the way, I think you're going to see more of that. You're probably going to see a rebranding of what it's called. And we're going to make that more of a part of what it means to be a subscriber. So, if you choose to be a perpetual owner, you you have a certain set of functions. You can use the software, you have the plugins, you have a certain sort of arsenal at your disposal. If you go subscription, you get a little bit more, and on a regular basis, you'll get free stuff from our partners, which is not unlike the video games model. You know, if you have a PlayStation or an Xbox, you can subscribe to their services, and typically you get an actual tangible benefit. If you stay a subscriber, you'll get a free game here and a free game there. Or, you know, if you subscribe to the Plugin Alliance bundles, at the end of the subscription, you get a coupon to actually buy plugins outright. So it's those kind of benefits that we want to bring into the subscription model to make it really, really appealing and really worth people's money, because it's not negligible to pay this amount of money every month or every year.
Do you have any sense of the sorts of people that are choosing subscription over perpetual? I just have a sense, and I don't have the evidence to back it up, but I have a sense that people earning a living from Pro Tools, professionals, are more inclined to take a subscription model because, of course, the expenditure is not capital expenditure, it's operational costs, and therefore is easier to offset in terms of tax and business expense. Do you have any sense of whether my theory has any grounds in fact?
It's interesting because, you know, we're doing deep dives to try and better understand it ourselves. I think if you look at the makeup of Pro Tools versus Pro Tools Ultimate within the realm of the Pro Tools subscription, it's extremely heavily slanted towards Pro Tools, the standard version. So I assume that a lot of professionals are going Ultimate, especially if they're working in post. So my sense is actually that there's a lot of hobbyists in there, and probably a predominance of hobbyists, and probably even more focused towards music as well, rather than audio post-production. So that's my sense, but I don't have sort of real data to back it up. My also sort of interactions with the community is typically that there's at least some of the people that have been around, that have been in our world for a while and are our professional now, are more connected to the perpetual model and are still going perpetual at this time. Now, if you go all the way to bigger enterprises, like, you know, bigger post houses, and then we're talking now about enterprise subscription deals where, you know, it's basically on a yearly basis, we just say, hey, you get 300 copies of Pro Tools for a year, and here's the price tag. So it's a slightly different world too.
Sure. And what about the removal of the reinstatement plans? Do you feel that has also had a positive contribution to more and more people going into the subscription model? Because obviously now, with it not being possible to upgrade or come back onto an upgrade plan, you're offering a cross-grade to subscription.
I would have hoped so, in a way, or I would have... you know, when we did that, I was anticipating that the outcome would be that, but I don't really have evidence to back it up. So it doesn't seem like it's driven a lot of people to make a switch, so to speak. The cross grades are still fairly limited. So I'm assuming that either people probably even buy new perpetual licenses just to stick with the model. And that may be what's fueling a pretty healthy, sort of steady perpetual business. So as of now, I don't really see an impact. Now I also know that there's a very, very large population of Pro Tools users who like being in the past. They have something that works, that they're happy with, their computing platform works, their Pro Tools works and does what they needed to do. So they're not making the jump, and they're staying with Pro Tools 12 or, you know, for older versions, which is, I think you will see in the very near future, some more aggressive, you know, pricing actions for those folks and real functionality that they will want, that will encourage them to get current and get on a subscription. So we're working on certain things for this quarter.
Yeah, and I mean, we're certainly aware of a proportion of the community who, you know, the phrase I would apply is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So they may still be running Pro Tools 8, Pro Tools 9, 12, because it does what they need it to do. And they own it and they continue to use it. But at some point, sooner or later, there's got to be offerings that are, oh, you know what, I could really do with that feature, or you know what, that's something I've got to consider.
Well, think about, you know, one thing that I'm not going to make any time frame promises because I can't do that. But when we launched Carbon, we introduced new functionality for Pro Tools and Carbon specifically that we call the Hybrid Engine. And the Hybrid Engine is very powerful in that it decouples the DSP hardware from the native mixing engine. So you have the ability to run your sessions basically natively and just call upon DSP tracks when you need them. And as many of your listeners know, it's a fairly big sort of limitations of HDX, where on HDX, everything has to exist in the DSP world. So your voice count, your track count, the complexity of your mixer, all of that is bound by the amount of DSP that you have. And yes, you can put native plugins on your mixer, but that creates a lot of round trip latency going back and forth between the cards and the computer. Now we said when we launched Carbon that functionality was coming to HDX.
Indeed.
And it's coming to HDX sooner than later. And I think for the folks that are sort of not current on their plan, that have HDX, they will see immense value in that functionality being available to them. So I'm hopeful that we can bring that to market in very short order, because that's going to make a huge difference for a lot of our users.
Yeah. Talking of voice count for HDX, is there any news on the horizon in terms of getting beyond the 256 voice ceiling that we had?
Yes, with the hybrid engine. With the hybrid
right,
engine.
So the hybrid engine is actually the solution to, will be the solution to that.
It will shatter that limitation.
Great. Good. Now, the Sync X product obviously came out, as we described it here on Pro Tools Expert, very much the sync tool for the 21st century in terms of providing a tool that was much more appropriate to, in many respects, a non-tape-based solution, which was really good to see. But one of the things we have noticed is a few queries about certain protocols that haven't been supported. The ST2110, one or two other of those sorts of protocols. Any plans to extend that?
So I am far from the synchronization expert on the team, so I'll forgive me for that. SyncX is one of those products where I should know more, but I will humbly say that I am not the expert here. Generally speaking, the intent with SyncX was to modernize the Sync HD. So very specifically targeted, exactly what you said, like more modern workflows, but also because Sync HD came to the end of its life. It's been around for a long time. A lot of components weren't available anymore. So we wanted to make a product that would be more usable, higher quality, higher precision, with more capabilities like the built-in video ref generator, those kind of things.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you almost preempted my next question. Was there an intentional aim to provide a product that was targeted at the smaller facility or even the one-man band working at home? Where, so obviously with this, you don't need a black burst generator. You don't need all those other black boxes. You've got word clock DA. So presumably that was very much, a target at a what we describe here as the cottagization of the industry, where you've got more and more people working from home. And this was pre-COVID. This was very much a workflow we are seeing in the industry as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to your point of other new protocols, this is something that we're looking at very closely. Anything that is actually network related is something that we're looking at very closely. You guys, I've obviously noticed that our newest audio hardware is network based. There's a lot of work that's going in that direction. I would say on the synchronization front, that's something that we want to look at a lot more closely, because we think that in many respects, using an Ethernet network as sort of the basis for synchronization is going to be the future, it has a lot of, I want to say, challenges attached to it and really doing it right. So that's kind of one of the next challenges that we are embarking on. But for now and for the foreseeable future, SyncX is it, as we start looking more in depth at all the new technologies.
Great. Okay, well, time has run out. So thank you very much, Francois, for taking the time to be with us and for sharing all about how the subscription model is working for you. Great news.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike. Really, really like chatting with you guys. We should do this more often.
Definitely. Take care.
Cheers. Bye.